Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Southfield, Michigan, and earned a BA in history and a law degree from the University of Michigan. In 1997, he and Mike Tenbush co-founded Think Detroit, which merged with Pell to build character in Detroit children through sports and technology. Today, as the CEO of Think Detroit Pell, his goal is to make Detroit a great city to live in and to raise a family in. His name, Dan Varner. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Dan Varner, the CEO and co-founder of Think Detroit Pell. Dan, welcome, an honor to have you.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here, Jack.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Absolutely. Well, as you mentioned in the introduction, raised in Southfield. I like to tell people, though, that I was born in Detroit and raised in paradise. Born here in Detroit, and when I was young, my family decided they wanted to see the world and didn't have the money to travel, so my dad applied for jobs overseas. He was a young engineer at the Marathon Petroleum Plant in southwest Detroit. And ultimately, he was offered a job in Saudi Arabia and another one in St. Croix. And so we moved to St. Croix in the U.S. Virgin Islands when I was about a year and a half old. And my sister and I spent really the first 7 years of our lives or so there. First memories are rainforests and so on, beaches and the like, Caribbean living. It was fantastic. So literally raised in paradise there. And then back to the States, we moved to a small farming community in southeastern Illinois. Robinson is the name of the town in Crawford County near Terre Haute, Indiana. And then back up here to Detroit in the fifth grade, Southfield specifically, and lived there through high school. Went to high school at University of Detroit, Jesuit High School and Academy, and then off to the University of Michigan.
What were the biggest things your mom taught you, Dan Varner, and what were the biggest things your dad taught you?
I'm really blessed to have fantastic parents, wonderful, wonderful parents who taught me, probably most importantly, the importance of hard work and education. My mom was an educator. She taught in the Detroit Public Schools for years and taught everywhere that we lived. She taught at a school district and eventually went back to school to become an attorney when I was in high school. And so from her, certainly the importance of education. Our dinner time conversation was around what was going on at school. And much of our free time was spent reading. Our television was locked up in a cabinet when we were growing up so that we didn't spend too much time in front of the TV. My mom and dad really believed in the importance of playing outdoors and reading and educating yourself. And so education was a big part of what we did as a family. Quick story. My mom, when we were in Illinois, she taught at a community college, taught English, and I was probably in fourth grade or so there then, and she would bring home the test that she would give her community college students in English for my sister and I to take. So education was a big part of what we were up to as kids and as a family. From my dad, really the importance of hard work. My dad grew up here in Detroit. His family had moved north as part of the Great Migration. Very poor, had been tenant farmers in Mississippi prior to moving north. And from him really was around the importance of hard work. He actually left school early in order to work to put his younger siblings through school and then went back to school and finished up his degree. And he's just one of the hardest working people I've ever met, still works a full-time job today. And from him I learned that if you apply yourself, you literally can do anything.
You talked about education. You talked about that you went to UAD High School, legendary high school. What makes that school so special?
That is a fantastic question. I suppose that if we actually knew the answer to that question, we could bottle it and put it in every other school across the country and produce the kind of alumni that school has produced. I like to tell people that my parents made great decisions for me along the way, but I frequently tell people that the single best decision they ever made was to send me to U of DI. They do a fantastic job of being academically rigorous and at the same time providing an underpinning around issues of social justice and morality that you take with you for the rest of your life. They really, so academically rigorous is part of it. I mean, they make you work. They get great students to be sure, but then they polish you up as a gem. They really make you work hard. And you come out of there ready for anything. They like to say that first year of college is pretty easy, and I found it to be so because I was so well prepared by U of D High School. But then the other side is you are involved in community service work. I worked at a soup kitchen my entire senior year in high school because that was something that I had to do as part of the experience of being a student there. Extracurricular activity is expected. And so part of the culture there is that you will get involved in things outside of school, and that might be debate, it might be basketball, you know, it might be sports or what have you. But part of that is also that you're going to be involved in your community to make it a better place. So it's a fantastic place.
25% of our children in Detroit receive a high school degree. How, Dan Varner, do we instill a culture within Detroit of the value, the requirement, the utter necessity of an education today?
That's a fantastic question and a challenge I think that all of us in the region had better be wrestling with full time. This is really not a question that impacts only the kids who are at risk of dropping out or not getting that education in Detroit, but the rest of us, because in the end, you know, the provision of a great tax base for city services, great quality of life in our neighborhoods, and it doesn't matter where you live. It can be Troy or Novi, and it can be Rosedale Park or East English Village or East Village. There's the importance of education and the quality of our community is paramount. Ultimately, a couple of things have to happen. One is that as a community, we have to create the culture that what we do here, and ultimately culture is that issue, right? It's about how we do things here. Our culture has to be such that the way that we do things here is we go to school and we get educated. And all of us have to be talking about it and rallying around it as something of extreme importance. And when all of us are talking about it and care about it, ultimately we'll stop kids when they're, you know, during school hours, when they're out on the sidewalk because they're not in school, and say, hey, aren't you supposed to be in school? Where do you go to school? And we'll fix it ourselves. That's one. Secondly, of course, we've got to get our educational systems and institutions to function at a higher level. I'm a real admirer of the work that Robert Bob has been doing around getting Detroit Public Schools to function at a higher level. But our educational systems include more than DPS. We've got charter schools and, frankly, school districts around the city. And as well, a lot of education for kids takes place out of the four walls of the school. A lot of it has to do with extracurricular activities and the like. And so we've got to get every institution engaged in delivering education to our kids functioning at as high a level as possible.
When we come back, we'll ask Dan Varner about the year he spent as a clerk for Justice Ellen Page. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. With Dan Varner, who got a law degree from the University of Michigan. And then, Dan, you spend 1 year as a clerk for Justice Ellen Page, a Supreme Court justice in Minnesota, who happened to have been an NFL Hall of Famer, defensive end for the Vikings and the Bears. What did you learn from Justice Ellen Page?
Justice Page is truly one of my heroes. And that dates back to my childhood in the early 70s. I actually have pictures from my kindergarten notebook, Jack, of football games I used to draw. And a number 88, the Minnesota Vikings, was prominently displayed in a lot of those pictures. Ellen Page was literally one of my childhood heroes as a football player. I was introduced to him in law school. I actually had the privilege of leading the Black Law Student Association at the University of Michigan Law School my third year in the law school. And Justice Page came in and spoke to an audience of us about the importance of community service and about some of the work that he was doing in Minneapolis and St. Paul, really in the entire state of Minnesota, tied to community service and his belief that it was critically important. And so probably the first and most important thing that I learned from him was that everybody has a role to play in community service. He was doing and still is doing fantastic things. He provides fourth graders who are academically succeeding an opportunity to travel with their families to Hawaii. Fourth graders in inner city schools who will never or who have never, many of whom have never left the state, much less traveled, you know, off the Continental 48. And then secondly, he provides scholarships to kids who are graduating from Minnesota high schools to go to Minnesota colleges, in exchange for which those kids have to go back to their communities and do accredited public service. His belief in leveraging every opportunity to get people to give back and make their communities a better place is part of what informs my work today and part of why I came back to Detroit and really got involved in trying to do the same thing here. The second thing, Justice Page is a fantastic writer. He is a very, very good writer, the most concise writer I've ever met in my life. And so I learned from him the importance of editing written work. He is rigorous around that work in ways that frankly were surprising, but were wonderful to learn. Those are probably the two most important things I learned from Justice Page. Maybe the third, though, and this wasn't something that I learned explicitly, but only in hindsight after reflecting on my time there, is that you don't have to be defined at any point in time in your life by what you've done up until that point in time. Justice Page was a fantastic football player, the first defensive player to ever win Most Valuable Player Award in the NFL. I think Lawrence Taylor may be the only other. He was Hall of Fame material from the beginning, but he figured out that he didn't want to be defined by his football career for the rest of his life. And so he went back to law school. I mean, he did what most NFL players dream about doing, which is really developing a second career that is at least as successful as his first. He is a fantastic judge on the state Supreme Court.
I think Joe Schmidt was co-MVP with Norm Van Brocklin one year.
You're right.
With the Lions. And Dick Butkus, one year the Bears were 0-12. And he was the MVP.
Is that right?
Wow.
That's pretty impressive, too.
You're with Justice Page for a year. Then what do you do?
So I came back to Detroit, and I'll tell a quick story about my parting, my leaving Minneapolis, because it really is part of the reason that I do this work today. I tutored and mentored a young man while I was in Minneapolis. His name was Hassan Scott. Hassan was an 11, 12-year-old kid growing up in inner city St. Paul, and he... I started off as his tutor, and so we'd go to the library and check out Goosebumps books and read them back and forth to each other. And as winter turned to spring, he said he wanted to play baseball, but he'd never played before. And he said, "I'll sign up to play, Dan, if you sign up to coach." And so we went down to the local rec center and we signed up to play and coach and had a fantastic summer of baseball. All of the team was the Bad News Bears, literally won one game that summer, and it was on a game-ending play, bad call at home plate. He called our kid safe when he was out by a mile. Radio station adopted the team and gave us uniforms. A state police officer was the head coach of the team and completely changed the way that those kids and the police interacted. And there was an ice cream parlor around the corner from this field that had no business being there but existed so that our group of families could go down to this ice cream parlor after the game to celebrate a win or loss. And as I mentioned, they were almost all losses. But learn from each other and talk about what was going on in their neighborhood and start to become a community that worked. As I left Minnesota, I gave Hassan a Red Wings jersey, a Steve Yzerman jersey, of course. He was a big hockey fan, and it was missing the captain C. And so I told him when I got back here to Detroit that I'd get a C and I'd mail it up there for his mom to sew on his jersey. It was just he and his sister and his mom. And I got back here and I sent that up there to him. I called to tell him I was going to send it to him and didn't get an answer. And I called repeatedly for a week. And after a week, started calling some other folks and learned that the day after I left, Hassan's mother had been shot and killed by her boyfriend. And I was not able to find Hassan for years. And what I realized at that point in time was that summer of youth baseball and the youth hockey team that Hassan played on provided for him mentors and role models that if he was able to stay in touch with, would help make sure that he grew into a man who realized his potential. And how critically important it was for us to put role models and mentors in the lives of kids. So I got here back here to Detroit, committed to doing that work, and I volunteered as a coach in terms of my community service work, and I began my legal career at Sachs Waldman O'Hare. I was a union side labor attorney.
1997, you and your friend from high school, Mike Tenbush, decide to start Think Detroit. Why, Dan Varner?
In part, it was because of the experience with Hassan. In part, it was also because of my own experience, Jack. When we moved to Robinson, Illinois, what I failed to mention earlier was that my sister and I desegregated a school district in the process of that move. Other blacks had lived in this town, but none had had school-age children. So my sister and I were the first black students at this school and in the school district. And it was a very unique experience, obviously, and difficult in many ways, but it was much more difficult for my sister than it was for me. And the reason for that fundamentally was because in that community, they had great youth sport programs for boys. And through that vehicle, I was able to run track and play baseball and play flag football and acquired teammates who became my friends. And so part of the reason that I am so passionate about the work of youth development and youth sports in particular is because I know from personal experience that it breaks down the barriers of race that in this region here in Southeast Michigan that we live with so dramatically. When you get kids playing on the same team, it doesn't matter what color they are. And if you look at the Tigers dugout and the Lions sideline, it's living proof of it. Different races get along wonderfully well when they're in pursuit of some common goal.
Think Detroit believes in sports and technology. Why the marriage of the two?
Interestingly, so when we got started, Mike Tenbush was all about technology. He wanted to provide old computers for kids. At the time, the digital divide was a huge issue in urban America, and we wanted to take these old computers and refurbish them and give them to kids so that they could use them for their families. In essence, sports became the hook that pulled kids in so that we could provide this technology education for them because we knew that that was critically important to their advancement. Over the years, the technology work has turned into leadership development and academic support generally. And so now as an organization, we're really about providing kids with all of the academic supports that they need in order to advance through the educational system and become contributing members of society as adults.
We're talking to Dan Varner. When we come back, we'll ask him why in 2006 they merged with Pell. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Dan Varner, the CEO and co-founder of Think Detroit Pell. Dan, 2006, Think Detroit merges with Pell, the Detroit Police Athletic League. Why?
A few reasons for the merger of Think Detroit and the Detroit Police Athletic League. One is that both organizations were engaged in very similar work. Both organizations were engaged in the work of youth development, probably for slightly different reasons. I think that the Police Athletic League brought more of a crime prevention component to it, about keeping kids busy and engaging them with police officers. And I think Detroit was probably more about providing kids with role models and mentors. But ultimately, the work was very similar in that we were running youth sport programs. And we realized early on in our conversations about working together that there were redundancies that we could eliminate, and so we could save some money. There were ways that we could learn from each other as organizations, and so improve our programs, that we were serving really, while we were running very similar programs, we were serving different audiences. And so this wasn't a matter of competition that wouldn't work. And so a merger made sense from that perspective. And probably most importantly, Jack, we realized that the organizations were supported by different audiences. Both organizations were 501c3 nonprofits, but PAL's support was primarily from corporations and special events, and Think Detroit's was primarily from individuals and from foundations, from grants. And so we realized that by merging these organizations, we would diversify the revenue stream and make it more sustainable, and we would improve the programs and serve more kids. And ultimately, when faced with reasoning like that, there was no reason not to merge.
You grew up in St. Croix, Southfield, Southern Illinois, Minnesota. Why do this in Detroit?
Detroit is in my blood. I love this city. I actually obviously have moved away from Detroit many times, and even as an adult moved away from Detroit and ultimately came back to Detroit every time. My dad has 9 siblings, all of whom grew up in the city and most of whom still live in the city of Detroit. And so even as a youngster, when I was in Southfield, I had a lot of cousins in the city and was back and forth all the time. Obviously went to high school in the city at U of D High. When I came back to the city, fundamentally, Jack, I believe that we've all been given gifts, and we each have a responsibility to use those gifts to make the world a better place. I can't imagine a better place to do that work than the city of Detroit. We certainly, all of us who live here know that we've got tremendous challenges. But I'm fond of saying, if you want to make a difference in the world, then this is where you've got to be. I mean, the challenges are front and center here. There are more vulnerable kids here than anywhere else, and so we've got to make a difference in their lives. And I love this city. There's so much good stuff that's going on. I think the people are so friendly and work so hard. We're so real as a people here in the city of Detroit. I think that this region really presents remarkable, unique challenges. And I love our state. I think it's a beautiful state. All the fresh water and the four seasons and on and on and on. I love this city and I love this state, and that's why I do it here.
You've stated many times, and I quote, that your goal is to make Detroit a great city to live in and to raise a family in. A lot of people would say, you know, the Lions will win the Super Bowl before that happens. The Cubs will win the World Series. Why do you think you'll see that goal?
I think, to be completely honest with you, that Detroit is, not will be, is a great place to be a kid and raise a family. It certainly takes some work, but there are fantastic things going on in Detroit. We run one of the best youth development through sport programs in the country, the largest after-school youth tackle football program in the country. Organization after organization, whether it's Mosaic Youth Theater or Think Detroit PAL or Southwest Solutions, has received national recognition for the work that they're doing here in our community. We've got world-class businesses in our community. I think Detroit is a great place to be a kid and raise a family. And so to those who say that the Cubs will win the World Series before that happens, I tell them that they're already wrong. And all you've got to do is come back to Detroit and live it and experience it for yourself to know that it's true. Not true for everybody and not true all the time, but it is true. It absolutely is true.
The other night I was watching TV and they showed a park that's been revived where people were playing
Horseshoes. There you go, right.
I was with a man in Grosse Pointe the other day, and he's talking about the Grosse Pointe parks have never been more crowded because people don't have the money to do other things. They're coming to the parks and meeting neighbors. You've been trying with others to recreate parks in the city and to revive baseball in the inner city. Talk about that.
Absolutely. Obviously, we run youth sport programs for about 12,000 kids a year, really putting in their lives great role models and mentors who serve as their coaches. And study after study says that when you put role models and mentors in the lives of kids as coaches, fantastic things happen. Kids talk to coaches sometimes in ways that they don't talk to their parents. And that's why all of us put our kids in youth sport programs. We all intuitively get how important it is. Of course, in order to provide those programs at a high quality to our community and to our kids, we've got to have great parks. As an organization, Think Detroit PAL does not own a single recreation facility. No gyms, no parks, none of that. We use the public infrastructure, and we believe in reinvesting in the public infrastructure so that it benefits everybody. And so we will renovate parks, whether it's Meharis Gentry Park or St. Hedwig Park or whatever it is, and do the same thing with gyms and the like. And we've had wonderful success partnering with our school district, partnering with charter schools, and partnering with the Detroit Recreation Department in order to get that work done. Have brought in funding from all manner of sources from around the country in order to help renovate parks here in the city of Detroit. And we have some spectacular parks, as we all know, who live in the city and who frequent the city. the beautiful thing about the work that we do, Jack, is that parents show up to see their kids play sports everywhere. That's an international phenomenon. And when they show up, just as you mentioned, they talk to each other at the parks. And inevitably, the conversation turns from their kids' game to other things that they have in common. What's happening at work? What's happening at school? What's happening in our neighborhood? And so when you get people together like that, families that once were individualistic become communities that work. And that really is one of the huge byproducts. We're very deliberate about it, but one of the byproducts of our work, we really create social capital among the families that play.
This is a tough time to run a non-for-profit in this town. How are you handling the economic challenges?
I had a story going into this year about how Think Detroit Pal was the best little nonprofit that nobody ever heard of, and we were too well kept a secret, and perhaps we are. But what I learned this year, Jack, more than anything else in these tough times, is that there is a that our community cares deeply about our work. Paul W. Smith, who of course graces these airwaves on his morning show, is a huge supporter of our organization, and of course his golf outing raises tremendous funds to support our work every year. We have done very well this year. I'm pleased to report the community has shown that they care about us. It's not a banner year, to be sure, but we have continued to provide programs for almost all of the 12,000 kids that we served last year without interruption. We will serve nearly as many kids this year. And so we've learned a lot. It's been a good year.
We're talking to Dan Varner, and I'm Jack Crystal, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Anything is possible with Jack Crisula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back with Dan Varner, who believes that Detroit already is a great city to live in and to raise a family. If you want to learn more or help, thinkdetroitpal.org. thinkdetroitpal.org. Dan, you mentioned Robert Bob earlier. Talk to us about what he's doing.
There's an interesting thing that's happened over time, and that is that the public, and here I mean us, all of us, in some respects, I think, have felt at times as though we don't own our public institutions. We're not engaged in fixing them. And when I say engaged in fixing them, I don't mean engaged in electing the people who will run them, but engaged in the work of fixing them ourselves. I think that Robert Bob has done two things. One is, obviously, he's had a lot of freedom and autonomy as a state-appointed financial manager in order to make the changes around the internal business operations of the district that needed to be made. And when I say needed to be made here, needed to be made from the perspective of improving student achievement, as well as needed to be made just from a business operations perspective. Obviously, it's difficult to understand how an entity could be paying people who shouldn't be paid, who because they're not actually employed by the district. And so he's done an effective job, I think, of both. I know that there's, you know, challenges that he has had in working with the school board. Ultimately, I think those will be ironed out. And ultimately, one of the things that he is working on now, I think, is around how to get the rest of us engaged in ownership of Detroit Public Schools so that when he's gone, we will continue the work that he has begun and will manage our schools as effectively as possible. The last thing that Robert Bob has done, I think, which is really worthy of mention. So I'm an old Union Side labor attorney at Sachs, Wallman, O'Hare, and he has been able to engage in the kind of constructive conversation with the Detroit Federation of Teachers that we haven't had in a long time. And I think that's in large part because he has cleaned the internal house of Detroit Public Schools. And when you see someone doing that, it's very difficult to not show up and negotiate in good faith. And so the DFT has been willing to, I think, make concessions and show up as a partner because he has. It's the same thing, I think, that our automotive companies did years ago, which is why Ron Gettelfinger has been so effective as a leader of the UAW. You now see tremendous partnership between labor and management, and I think that we're starting to see that developed in Detroit Public Schools as well, to Robert Bob's credit.
You mentioned that he's getting people engaged. One special person that he's got engaged is Bill Cosby, who keeps coming back. You've met him. Tell us about Bill Cosby.
I love... So I want to draw an analogy here, a metaphor. I think that Bill Cosby and our president, Barack Obama, are up to the same thing. And I want to specifically talk about what I think they are doing in the black community. As an African-American, I want to address that issue. Both men have a tremendous message around self-responsibility. There certainly is. I would never minimize this. There institutional racism exists. And when you can point to figures that demonstrate that African-Americans, you know, have per capita less income, higher insurance costs, so on and so forth, certainly to some extent, discrimination is in play. But there is something that we can do about it. There is great responsibility that we have as a people to lift ourselves up. And at times, we have been our own worst enemy. And I think that Bill Cosby and President Obama have said that at times. And that's not to take everyone else off the hook. Everyone has a role to play in helping to fix this. But I love the fact that Bill Cosby talks about self-responsibility. I love the fact that President Obama does the same thing. And I love the fact that they're both willing to put their money, so to speak, where their mouth is and show up and do the work themselves.
Dan Varner, working with these 12,000 kids a year, what have these young people taught Dan Varner?
That's a wonderful question. Boy, so much. And the stories are... some are heartwarming and some are heartbreaking around the things that they have taught me. Probably more than anything, Jack, what they've taught me is that they want guidance and structure. A lot of times I think that those of us who are adults look at kids and are afraid to provide some of the guidance and structure that we think they need, out of fear that they'll reject it, or kind of a thought that we're wasting our time. In fact, kids crave it. We had a young man come back to our office this past summer, who was a freshman at Michigan State University, who grew up in the neighborhood near the Jeffries Projects, one of the original kids who we served years ago. And he showed back up at our office and he said, you guys made a huge difference in my life, putting me on a baseball team years ago. I want to make that same difference in the lives of 15 kids. I want to coach baseball this summer and provide for those 15 kids what you guys provided for me. And what he was saying, in essence, was not to give up on kids. And I think more than anything else, that's what kids are telling us, is don't give up on me. I have a world of potential. I can get anything done. I can be anything. But I need your help in order to do that. And so give me the best that you've got in order for me to become the best that I can be. So many lessons. One, to have fun, of course. Kids love to have fun and not to take yourself too seriously. I think that I've learned that the hard way from kids a number of times. But probably more than anything else, Jack, it's that they can be anything. But in order to achieve that, they want and need our help.
If there's a listener tonight that says, wow, I've been listening to you for 45 minutes, I know I should give back. But I'm too busy trying to put bread on the table. I'll give back later in life. What do you say, Dan Varner?
I say there is no later. Two quick stories. One is I had the privilege of working with a man named Dwayne Hurt for a number of years. Dwayne was a gentleman who I went to law school with. He was actually born on the west side of the state in Kalamazoo, grew up over there, and got an engineering degree from Michigan State University, then went to law school at the University of Michigan, also got an MBA from the Ross School of Business at the University of Michigan. So, tremendously well-educated man who put those talents to use on behalf of our organization. He served on our board and ultimately transitioned from his career in business to the chief operating officer role at our organization. Dwayne passed away unexpectedly in January of 2007, a year into his service with us. And what he said was, when I asked him to do the work with us, absolutely, I'm going to do it, because tomorrow is not promised to any of us. And while I'm called to make a difference in the lives of kids and in Detroit, I need to make that difference now, because I may not get a chance to make it tomorrow. This moment right now is what we have. Right now. There is no later. There's right now. And so show up now. There's time. There's money. Show up.
Last question, Dan Varner. What advice would you give to our young listeners this evening?
I think that kids have in front of them tremendous opportunity. But once again, I would say to our young listeners the same thing that I'd say to the adults, which is that what you have is this moment right now. That's the one moment you can control. I would love to think that we can all plot our future out and end up exactly where we decided we wanted to end up. Frequently, we don't. Other opportunities pull us in other directions, and we do different things with our lives than we thought we would do. What you have is right now that is within your control. And so right now, in this moment, be everything you can be. Be everything you can be right now, and the future will take care of itself.
Dan Varner, thanks for all you do. Detroit is a much better city to live in, a great city to live in, because of Dan Varner. Keep it up.
Thank you.
Our guest next Sunday will be Dr. Franklin Cheng. No other man in the history of the world has gone up more into space than him. 7 space flights. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Well.